This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Joe Palca, sitting in for Ira Flatow. Investigators are sifting through the aftermath of the 4 bombings in London. They're looking for physical evidence that will reveal just what happened, what kinds of explosives were used, where were they placed, how were they detonated. They'll also be looking for parallels between the London bombings and the bombings that exploded last year in Madrid. For the first part of this hour, we'll be talking with explosive experts about the work going on in London, but I have to make it clear that the people we'll be talking to are not part of the official investigation. They just wanted to talk, we wanted to talk with them about the kinds of steps that have to be undertaken after this kind of an event. So we invite you to join with your questions, and perhaps we'll be able to answer some, but again, it will be of a generic nature. We don't have specific investigators. They're out doing their job in London right now. Our number here is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. If you want more information about what we'll be talking about this hour, go to our website, www.sciencefriday.com, where you'll find links to our topic. Now let me introduce my first guest. Jimmy Oxley is a professor of chemistry at the University of Rhode Island in Kingston, Rhode Island. Thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you.
So, Professor Oxley, if I can start, news reports are saying that these bombs were less than 10 pounds, and yet they seem to have done quite a bit of damage. Is that surprising at all, to have such a small bomb do so much damage?
Not at all. The news reports sounded like they would be around 10 pounds. That's what a 10-pound bomb looks like.
Well, maybe you can describe to me what kind of explosive force does it have? I mean, I don't think people have a clear idea of, first of all, what goes into a bomb that weighs 10 pounds?
Well, you mentioned earlier the kind of explosive. Obviously, if it's a military explosive, it performs better, more catastrophically than a commercial or an improvised explosive. But what's special about explosives per se is their power. And by power, I'm using that in the scientific term, in terms of the rate at which energy is released. So if you compare the energy in a candy bar to an energy in the same amount of TNT, the energy in the TNT can very much be less, but the power of the TNT comes from how fast that energy is released.
Huh.
That's what makes explosives more special than other materials that contain energy.
Now news reports are describing these bombs as what they call high explosives. What does that mean?
Well, then that gives us the hint that these are probably military explosives, although technically commercial explosives are high explosives, meaning high explosive means that it's not easily initiated without a firing train.
And what's a firing train? We're having to learn from the beginning here, I'm afraid.
I'm sorry. usually you think of a firing train as being a detonator, a blasting cap. There's some initiating system, and you mentioned that on your intro, that they were going to be looking for the initiating system as well as the type of material.
I see. So those are chemically distinct entities. One, I take it, which has a lot of energy, but you have to give it a good kick to get it started.
That's correct, and that's why these things can be used safely for lots of legitimate purposes, that they need, as you put it, a good kick, because you need to be able to handle them safely up until you intend them to initiate.
And can you say anything, you were referring the difference between a military type of explosive and one that might be used in a construction site. What would the military be wanting from an explosion that a construction site would not?
The construction site usually wants to either heave rock or shatter rock, they don't want to pulverize it. Usually they're trying to get some amount of breakup, whereas the military explosives are usually trying to penetrate something very hard like steel or knock down a building. So they want a more powerful material. So generally what you find at a construction site is not the kind of explosive you find in a military magazine.
All right, we're talking with Professor Jimmy Oxley. She's a professor of chemistry at the University of Rhode Island in Kingston. And we're joined now by Professor Van Romero. He's Vice President for Research and Economic Development and a professor of physics at New Mexico Tech. That's in Socorro, New Mexico. He joins us by phone. Thanks for being with us today.
Hello.
Hello. So,
is that Jimmy that's also on the line?
Yes, that's Jimmy Oxley is also on the phone with us.
Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, Van.
How have you been?
We used to work together, Joe.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I hope that your departure from working together was amicable. We're not having a...
Quite amicable,
good.
Yes.
But he doesn't send me any money.
That's too bad.
That's because Jimmy has it all.
That's too bad. Well, Professor Merrill, we were just talking about the nature of the difference between the two types of explosions, and I mean between a military type of a bomb and a commercial one. I'm wondering if you can tell me, is there a signature for one type over the other that investigators will find? Is it a chemical signature, or is it just the nature of the destruction that the bomb causes?
Well, we try and use all the evidence that is left behind to try and learn as much as we can about the particular event, everywhere from what type of explosive was used to even what type of initiation device was used. So blast patterns, the type of destruction, but also, most importantly, will be chemical residue and what molecular, what molecules are left behind after the explosion was done.
It seems, from my brief review of the world of explosives, that potassium nitrate is a pretty common ingredient. If you find that, that's not surprising. Are there telltale signatures of other compounds that can give you clues as to what's going on?
Well, when we get good samples at the scene of a bombing, we can do mass spectral analysis and really identify very specific molecules that could be associated with particular types of explosives. And
Joe, can I interrupt?
Explosives.
Sure. Jimmy Oxley, go ahead.
Not potassium nitrate, ammonium nitrate.
Oh, ammonium nitrate, okay. Sorry. Thank you for clearing that up. Is that the ingredient in black powder, or is that something else?
Potassium nitrate is the ingredient in black powder, but that's generally not what you're seeing being used as an explosive. In fact, black powder is not classified as a high explosive.
I get it. And that's we think we're talking here about high explosives.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, why don't we see if our listeners would care to join this conversation. The number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And let's go to Justin in New York City. Justin, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually in upstate New York, and my question does surround trains, buses, and subways in New York. I often travel down to the city on mass transit, be it Amtrak or the MTA, and of course, once I'm there, I do use the subway. My question is about prevention. I think Susan Collins this morning was quoted as having said that perhaps we've over-invested in the airports and not paid enough attention to, our rail infrastructure and buses and so on and so forth. So my question for your experts was what could be done to potentially detect these chemicals as they enter more soft targets.
Justin.
As the one that was hit in London.
Yeah, Justin, that's a very interesting question. So really it sounds to me like the question is, is there a way of detecting these things without being, right next to them? Van Romero, is there detection technology?
Remote detection is a very difficult thing. And the longer you have, the more time you have to integrate a signal, the closer you are to the chemicals that you're trying to detect, obviously the much easier that it is. At airports, we're accustomed to and have accepted the fact that we have to queue up in a line and actually spend some time going through a detection system. And in some airports, they have sniffers which can detect these chemicals. Mass transit, just by its nature, is a mass of people, and so the issue is having to slow people up and make it a lot more inaccessible to a large number of people getting at a very short period of time. The detection problem is a tough problem. Right now, probably the best thing out there are dogs to sniff out explosives. But the dogs don't last. Their duty cycle is pretty short. They don't last long, and so it's quite difficult for them to do quite a lot of sniffing, if you will, if there's a lot of people. So this is a very difficult problem. A lot of people working on it, and I think we'll see some progress, but it's slow in coming.
So there's nothing, for example, I just came into the studios here on the subway, and you go through a turnstile where you have to slow down and have your card read. There's nothing that's going to go fast enough to capture each person as they go through a turnstile, for example?
I think if, the average time of people going through just a regular metal detector is about 12 seconds, and even that's not really enough time. You need more time than that with current technology that's deployed out there commercially to sniff these explosives.
Okay. Just one quick final question. I mean, the X-rays aren't actually seeing the bomb or the potential bomb. It's something else that's detecting the explosive material or intended to. The airport X-rays, I mean.
You know, what you're looking at is, in the X-rays, you're just looking for electronics or different types of contrasting material that could be an initiator or parts of the explosive itself. So in the X-ray machine, you just see contrast.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you very much for that. We're going to take a short break now. We're speaking with Professor Van Romero. He's a physicist from New Mexico Tech in Socorro, New Mexico, and also Professor Jimmy Oxley. She's a professor of chemistry at the University of Rhode Island in Kingston, I think is right. Yes, Kingston, Rhode Island. And we're talking about the attempts that investigators or the detective work that investigators have to go through when they're searching for bomb material and the kinds of work that's going on in London in the aftermath of the bombing attacks that took place there. We'll be coming back after a short break, so stay with us. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. We'll be back after a short break.